You're listening to the Empty Stringers podcast, where every week we talk about locating, catching, and the conservation of redfish. My hope is to share with you what I'm seeing from the polling platform so that together we can catch more fish. Think of it as your weekly fishing report. Welcome back to the podcast, folks. I'm your host, Matt Parrish, and today we're going to recap the Matagorda Island camping and fishing trip. I am severely under the weather because I got sick. I started getting sick Saturday night, and we came home Sunday. Monday, I went to an urgent care, got an antibiotic, and it did not help. I think I have a virus, but I've got flu-like symptoms for the most part. And I laid in bed all day today, and that is not something that I do ever. So I am hoping that I start to feel a little bit better tomorrow. I almost didn't record the podcast. I almost put an old episode on, but I knew that everybody who went on the trip and who were wondering about the trip was going to want to listen in to both me and Carrie as we recap this trip. So I had to do it. So let's get down to all the things. We spent a couple days beforehand packing. Chris and I, Chris Colin is my normal travel buddy on this trip. He goes down with me. I handle all of the skiff associated things. He handles all the food. So that works out very nicely. It's not a bad gig at all. So he got everything ready on the food end and got all his camping stuff ready. I got the camping and all the skiff stuff ready, and we headed out. We stayed at Captain Scott Knoll's place with his beautiful wife, Camille, on Wednesday evening. And Scott just finished his new house. In fact, he's still got some finishing touches that he's putting on. He was painting doors, just finished painting some doors when we got there that day. But it was really cool because I helped him for 2 or 3 days with the electrical. Chris was down there one of those days. And when we were wiring the inside of the house, but I helped him with the main feed, the underground feed to feed the new building, and helped him wire everything. And we spent a lot of time on the phone trying to, you know, answer certain questions and, you know, get him moving, and vice versa with my Baytown house. I've had a lot of questions for him about just things that I'm not used to doing. Scott is a very, very handy human. He knows how to do a lot of things. So the plan was go down there, get there by 4:30, hang out with Scott and Camille, have dinner, and then record a podcast for the Empty Stringers podcast. And we got down there at 6:15 instead of 4:30 because of all the stops we made. And we eat dinner. And then we start drinking beer and talking. And before you know it, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And we've all been telling stories and talking our face off. And I'm like, I'm going to bed. Like, we got to get up at 6 a.m. I'm toast. And so Scott said, well, he let us borrow. He has a new one-piece sawgrass fly rod, and he let us borrow it, which was super cool. He wanted us to go try it out, so we took that with us, and I said, well, I'll come by Sunday and drop the fly rod off, and maybe we'll do the podcast then. But whenever we got done and we were ready to get home, and I was like, man, let's just do it online. So I still have Scott on the line for still got him on the hook to do a podcast. We're just going to do it over StreamYard, just like we would normally do a not in person you know, an over the internet kind of deal. So don't worry, that is still on the table, and I'm really looking forward to it. After all the stories, I have heard a lot of Scott's stories. I've fished with him twice. I've talked to him a bunch on the phone. We've hung out a few times. I've heard a lot of his stories. I listen to the Bite Me podcast every week, so I know. But I heard some stories Wednesday night that I had not heard before about his cop days and all kind of stuff. So I don't even know what angle to take when I sit down to interview him, because there's so much. Like, you could literally do a 24-hour mini-series on his life. So I've really got to figure out what I want to cover and how I want to approach that interview. Very gracious of him to let me do it. I really appreciate it. And so I'm looking forward to that. Probably going to tape it next week. But so we go to bed at 2 a.m. And we get up at 6 and tiptoe out. He told us that his dogs weren't going to let us get out without making noise, like that we were going to wake them up. But we tiptoed out, quiet as a mouse, and got out, and the dogs didn't start barking until we drove off. And so we get out, get to the fishing center. We got the skiff loaded down. We brought, 15, 20, 25 gallons of fuel, plus the tank in the skiff is a 15-gallon. It was full. We had a 65-quart Arctic. 65-quart Yeti, I think it's a Yeti. And then my normal 45 Arctic that is strapped into my boat for dry storage. And then a 20-quart for ice, drinking ice. And several dry bags, folding chairs, you know, bungee cords, our hammocks, thermocells for mosquitoes, sunscreen, sunglasses, the whole thing. We get down there. We're the first ones to the island because we always go out ahead of time. Everybody else leaves. They get there Friday morning and launch at the fishing center. We launch Thursday morning at daylight. So get out there and get camp set up and chilled out around camp for a little bit because the wind was blowing. Took a walk, saw a little bit of the island, and then we decided to get out and fish. And the first day that we fished, we were trying to figure out the pattern. The water level was crazy low, very prohibitive in just normal navigations. Some of the places that you'd run over that were no problem at all, you couldn't get over in those conditions because we were down around zero at MLLW. Super shallow. And there's a lot of hard sandy bottom there, so you got to be a little on the careful side. Some of y'all are laughing at just hearing me say careful side because I like to push it. But I know what my skiff can do, and I know where I can push it and where I can't. Well, we realized early on that brown grass, there's different kinds of grass there. There's green grass. Forgive me, I don't know the name of the grass. I'm talking about seagrass on the seafloor. There's brown grass and green grass. The green grass we were finding typically growing in sand. The brown grass we found typically growing in mud. Is it the same kind of grass and it's just dead versus alive? I have no idea. Doesn't matter. The brown grass was holding shrimp. A lot of shrimp, half-inch size shrimp. So as soon as we saw that, we were like, that's the ticket. That's where all the redfish are going to be. We saw probably 35, 40 redfish that afternoon. We fly fished basically all afternoon until the wind picked up again. Then we went to conventional. As soon as we went to conventional tackle, we caught two fish. We could have caught 7 or 8 fish on the fly if we didn't suck at fly fishing. We just suck at it. But, you know, the only way to get better outside of lessons, which I am going to take here in the next week or two, I've got something, I'm setting up something with Andy Packmore at Gordy & Son. And so that's going to help. But all your, you know, knowing what to do is half the battle. You can do it until you have a redfish in front of your face. And then, you know, you've got a moving boat, you've got wind, you've got moving fish. It gets a little more difficult. So both Chris and I put some ugly looking casts in front of some fish. Chris had one that pulled right out of the fish's mouth. I'm watching the fish, but I thought he had just as good of a look as I did. And the fish lunged for his bait, gill flared, getting ready to suck it in, and he strip set too fast, pulled it right out of his mouth. And so we only caught two fish that afternoon, but we saw a bunch. I mean, we could have caught, if we were just going to chunk paddle tails out, and we could have caught a ton of fish. And so we're like, well, the wind's going to blow the next 2 days. We knew that that was our shot to fly fish. And so we took it and just tried to get over the fact that we weren't going to catch as many fish and try to get some good, solid practice with fish in front of us. So that was good. We had a couple of really good shots that fish didn't eat for whatever reason. And so that's the way it goes. Next day, we, knowing that the shrimp were in the brown, excuse me, that the shrimp were in the brown grass on mud, we decided to go hunt down areas like that. So we go back into Long Lake and Pat's Bayou or Pat's Bay and Twin Lakes, and we're way far from camp, like 30-mile round trip, because we were trying to stay away from areas that we knew the kayakers were going to be in. So when the kayakers get to the island, they've only got a couple of options. They can go to Fish Pond. They can fish the shoreline between Fish Pond and the campsite. They can fish Army Hole. They can fish Pringle. That's really about it. I mean, as far as paddling distances go, that's what you have to deal with. And there were a lot of them. So we're like, look, we've got the means to get out and go fish other places, so let's do that. And so that's what we did. And we searched for muddy bottoms and brown grass, and we found fish every day. Some days we caught more than others. I think Sunday ended up being our best day. We caught 7 that morning. But we averaged anywhere from, you know, 2 to 6 fish a day or 2 to 4 fish a day, something like that. And a lot of that was seeing more fish than we caught, obviously. Sometimes you make a good cast, sometimes you make a bad cast. And I've noticed that depending on the day, some days I'm cool as a cucumber, and I can hit them on the nose. And other days I'm real amped up, and it's harder because I don't know why that is. I just get excited. But we went Friday morning. We went and met the crew at the ramp to see if they needed us to carry anything in, and they didn't. Well, I had wanted to go fish Welder Flats. And Welder Flats is a long run down the intercoastal, but we're already here. Like, I just had to. So, had never been there, didn't know what we were in for. Got there, could see that the main lake leading into Welder Flats had the tops of crab traps showing. So, that told me right there, like, we're fishing the main lake. We're not going to push any further back than that because it's just going to get too shallow, especially with that seagrass growing up. Your water column shrinks on you real fast. So we got off in this main lake, and luckily enough, it had brown grass and it had mud, and it had more shrimp in Welder Flats than I saw anywhere else that we were, saving except maybe Pringle, which I'll get to that later. But so we got there, and there's a boat in the middle of the lake. Okay. I'm on the side of the lake. I picked the right shoreline and I'm poling that right shoreline. Okay. And common sense would tell you that when a boat is poling down a shoreline in a certain direction, that they intend to pole the whole shoreline, if not most of the shoreline. Well, as soon as we shut down and start poling the shoreline, this boat fires its engine and it is so shallow where he's at. And he's slinging mud and busting grass up and trying to mudskip his boat over to the shoreline, and he does, and cuts us off. So I'm like, well, that wasn't very nice. But I just keep pulling towards him. And I get just about to where we're all a little uncomfortable with how close we are to each other. And then I turned and headed straight out into the middle of the lake. Well, right about the time I do that, a school of redfish starts coming straight towards us. They were out in the middle. They're moving right towards us. Me and Chris both throw out. We hook up, double up, right in front of this boat. And so they see the whole thing going on, and then they start drifting and following us through the lake. So we get to the middle of the lake, and it's awkward how close they are and how they're kind of following us, and, you know, right on our tracks. But when we turned and headed a little further up in the lake, we lost them because they couldn't float, and they were already about to be stuck. They couldn't float in what we were floating in, and so we lost them at that point. But we were going through there, finding fish, laying in the grass, and I had one right in front of me, 10 feet off the bow, laying in the grass. I pitched my paddle tail at him, and he inhaled it, and I set the hook so hard that I acrobat flipped him out of the water. And Chris caught a, I think he caught a crawler up on the right bank over there. We had a really fun morning in Welder Flats. Packed in and headed all the way back to camp, and went out to Conti that evening. And Conti was so shallow at the mouth of it getting in that I was like, oh, we're going to have the whole place to ourselves. No one's getting in. Because I literally had to jump over dry ground to get into Conti. It was the only way I knew to get in. Well, we're sitting out there in Conti thinking, you know, we're in a foot of water, thinking we've got the whole place to ourselves. And along comes a giant Mowdy with a 250 on the back. And he's burning across the lake. And he disappears on the back left side of Conti and looks like he's headed for Pringle. I'm like, how the heck did he get in there? So I figure out where they're getting in. It's a cut that I did not notice last year. In fact, we went up in the area. I think it's one of those things where, like, you just have to be from that area to know it. But we found where they were coming in and out of. It's still very shallow. But started using that as well. And we caught some fish in Conti, had a good time. The guys back at camp were super fun. They fed us well. We only ate with them one night because Chris took care of the food for he and I. And that was good. But they did make some good food, and it was good to catch up with all the guys. I didn't even get to meet everybody because I was seeing people post on Instagram and Facebook in the Salty Yak Pack, and I'm like, I didn't even meet that guy. Like, I don't even know who that guy is. But I did get to meet several of you that listen to the podcast. I got to visit with several of you, and I really enjoyed that. That was a ton of fun. It was fun just getting out fishing, having nothing on the agenda but to fish and sleep and eat. And that was awesome. The boat performed excellent this year. I did not spin a prop. I did not have any issues with anything. It was awesome. My power pole was broken, but it was because the motherboard went out, and that was a warranty fix. And the boatyard ordered me one. It came in. I went there yesterday, and JT came out and swapped it, like, on the spot. So that was cool. So the boat's fixed. It's back in the lift. I was going to go fishing tomorrow with my buddy Paul and Drew, and I can't. I could barely get out of bed. So no fishing for me tomorrow. I'm hoping by Friday I'll be better. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes. My takeaway from the trip, all in all, like, if I had to say, oh, wait, I forgot the Pringle side. Okay, so because we didn't fish Pringle, until the very end, the last day, because of what I said earlier. We didn't want to trod all over the ground that the kayakers were going to cover. We didn't feel like that was fair. So we just gave Pringle to them. There's like, you know, 20-something kayakers. Let them run, do their thing out there. And from the reports we're getting, it seemed like it was on in Pringle. They were seeing a lot of schooling fish. Chris and I were seeing some tailing fish, and we were seeing small pods, but we hadn't seen any crazy schools other than like in Welder Flat. We saw a couple of big ones, but so we realized, like, all right, Sunday, when everybody gets up and paddles home, we're going to Pringle. And I fish Pringle a fair amount of times through the years that we've done this. And so I knew where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do. And we get back Sunday morning, get up. I was starting to not feel great. But it's the last day, you know, and the wind laid down beautifully. The forecast was going to be like, the forecast was up around 18. Man, it blew like 10 most of the morning. So get back to Pringle. We were headed to the far end of it and saw a school of redfish shut down, caught two or three fish off of schools in that little area, and then picked up and ran to where we were headed. And caught, like, I think we had four or five fish that we had boated by the time we were like, we saw a good tailing school. And I said, man, I really think we could get on these fish with a fly rod. And so it was my turn to be on the bow. Chris had just caught a fish. So I get up there. We're chasing down this school. I've got my fly rod. And I put some of the worst fly casts you've ever seen in your life at these fish. I'm talking about like Stevie Wonder could have out fly casted me in front of these fish. I don't know why, man. I don't know. Had my whole morning that morning was like that. Other than the first few fish I caught, I nailed the first few fish just right where it was supposed to be. And just like it was supposed to go. Then I proceeded to scare crawlers all morning because I was throwing too close to them or, you know, something. But I got the fly rod, throwing terrible casts at this school. Finally get a good cast and hook up, catch that fish on the fly, had a blast. Then I'm like, all right, they're going to fire back up again. So we just got to wait it out. So we start pushing around these backwaters, and Chris is chunking the fly, and it takes a little while. But right before we're about to leave, the school fires back up, and it's not just one; it's two big pods now. And so I'm pulling Chris up on this pod. He puts a cast out there, hooks a fish, catches him on the fly. Awesome! Snap picture. Let the fish go. And then we change places, and we're moving toward the second school. These schools are moving really slow. They're tailing, moving real slow. Get over there, and this time I've got the slightest bit of wind at my back, and I'm putting good casts out. I put the first cast a little too far to the left, and I didn't want to wait. I try to go a little farther than I need to because I want the fly to sink, because these fish are head in the mud, tails in the sky. But the problem is when I put one out there like that, I get very impatient because I'm waiting for that eat, and I don't like to sit and wait for too long. So I end up picking it up. I pick it up when I should have probably left it laying there. But I pick it up, throw it down. It's still too far to the left. Pick it up, throw it down. This is the one. Strip, 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 eats. And I have the first few fish I ever caught on the fly, or that I ever hooked on the fly, I lost due to poor hook sets. And I'm a stickler for a hook set anyway. When I'm fishing conventional tackle, like if you see me set the hook, I'm ripping their lips off. Okay. It's just what I got from the bass world that I lived in before this. And so when it comes to the fly rod, you know, you strip set instead of pulling up like you're, you know, gonna set the hook on a bass or a rod and reel. You strip set, meaning you grab the line and you pull back and strip it through your guides as hard as you can. But because you're then fighting the fish, a lot of times it's kind of a double motion where you're stripping and then you're raising the rod at the same time. And I did that relatively hard, I will admit. I strip set as hard as I could, and I gave a healthy raise of the rod. And that rod snapped at the joint where the handle section goes into the first eyelet section. Snapped. Then the rod shoots down the line. Fish is still on, so I'm reeling with just the butt of the handle and the reel in my hand, and then the fish comes off. So I got a broken rod. But that rod is it's a really nice rod. I spent some money on it. It's a Scott Sector 8-foot 10-inch rod. It's a premium rod. I got it at Gordy and Sons. And one of the reasons I did that for multiple reasons. One was, as a guide, I wanted, when I had fly guys on the boat, your typical fly guy, even the really good ones, are usually going to go for your middle grade to nice ish rod. Like they may spend $500, $600, $700 on a rod. This is like an $1,100 rod. It's a really nice rod, and I wanted to be able to put something in their hand that would enhance the experience of paying for a guide. Excuse me, y'all are gonna have to just ignore my coughing. And so I got some of Grandpa's cough medicine there. So I wanted to put something nice in my customer's hands. The other reason I did it is because when you buy a premium rod at Gordy and Son, I don't know if it's all of those premium rods, but I know that this one, it's unconditionally warranted for life. So I can be a retard and mess it up and it still gets fixed. And the only thing they charge is a repair fee, which is like $65 to $100. But when you buy a Gordy and Son, you drop it off there, they pay for your first repair. It's on the house. So pretty sweet gig. I'm dropping it off whenever I get to feeling better, hopefully tomorrow or Friday. And they're going to get that fixed up for me. So we caught 7 fish that morning in Pringle. And we had a great time. We packed up, headed in around 11:30. So, you know, from we started fishing around 7. And caught 7 to 11:30, caught 7 fish, not bad at all. Went in and packed up and hit the road, headed home. And man, I was glad to get home and take a shower. And here are my takeaways from the trip. There were a lot of funny moments that you know, were probably funny to me and Chris or to whoever was with us around, but may not translate abroad if I try to tell them here. But we had a really good time with everybody. It seemed like everybody there, they were just good people. Everybody's looking out for everybody else, making sure that everybody's doing okay, poking fun at each other, and just having a good time. I love to hear about what everyone else is doing in their walk of life, what their jobs are, what their home life looks like. I love to dig in and ask questions and learn about people. And I got to do that a lot. And it just so happened that everybody on the trip was really interesting in their own walks of life. So very, very much enjoyed it. If I had to change, if I had to change anything, I would go in May. The reason I'd go in May, because water levels will be higher, and the schooling fish that are happening right now, they really kick off down there in May. So it's just, it's easier to find tailing schools everywhere in May down there. Whereas where we, you know, where we were this time, we found them in several areas, but it wasn't as plentiful as it was last year. I think last year we caught 50, we caught something close to like 50 redfish while we were there. And this year, I think it was probably in the, oh man, it was probably in the 20 range, if I had to take a guess. So a lot less fish caught, but we still had a great time. A lot of those misses were just our fault, to be honest with you. So we're always learning, trying to get better. Next week, I've got a full packed week of guiding. For me, I normally only guide 2 days a week. I'm guiding 3 days next week because I just had a special request from a buddy who wanted to get his dad out, and a domestic coordinator granted me permission to do that. So I've got 3 days of guiding next week. I've got, I think, another two the week after. But I do have some openings in May. Right now in Galveston, it's going off. It is going off. There are schooling fish everywhere. And you pick the right, it's got to, you know, it's not every single day, but it's most days. So we hit it just right. It should be good. If you want to go, give me a shout. You can email me at emptystringers@gmail.com. You can give me a call. Actually, you can't give me a call. I'm not going to give up my phone number on the podcast, but you can go to the website, cappedmattparish.com. And you can follow me on the TikToks at Empty Stringers and then Instagram at empty_stringers. So let's get to our Bible tidbit. Breaking that rod is what made me think about this verse. It's Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. Goes all the way down through 21. It says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So let's explain that a little bit. So, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. That's the verse we're coming back to. That's the line we're going to come back to. But, you know, I noticed that every time I get something new and nice, it gets damaged. So I bought my, and I may have done this Bible tidbit already, so if I did, forgive me, but I bought my Toyota Tacoma brand spanking new about a year ago. And it got, like, the second week I had it, I backed into a mailbox. And I don't back into a mailbox. The thing has a backup camera on it. Like, I can see where I'm going backwards. I don't know why I did it. I don't know what was going on. I backed into a mailbox. Put a big dent and a scratch in the tailgate. And then, unbeknownst to me, I don't know what happened, but I have scratches on the wheel well all down the side of the bed on the driver's side. It looks like a cat clawed it 1,000 times. I have no idea what happened, but it is what it is. When I got that brand new Sabine skiff, I had been under that bridge there at Bayou Vista on the other side of the one going out when you launch at Lewis's Bait Camp. So I'd been under that rail bridge in a boat 500 times, maybe Never hit it. Never hit it once. Like the second time I'm going through it, coming back through it in the Sabine, I didn't jack down far enough. I waited too late to slow down, and when the aft wake hit the stern, it shoved the boat sideways and slammed the stern into the bridge and scratched it. And so then you look at the brand new, you know, shiny fly rod, the Scott Sector rod that I was just telling you guys about. I've caught like 4 fish on the thing, and it broke. So that's incredibly frustrating, but I try to look at things, even though like I like to buy good things, things that work. There's a Guy Clark song called Things That Work. That's what I like. I like having quality things around that do the job they're supposed to do, that are dependable and well built. Those things tend to cost a little more money. Could I have gotten a cheaper rod? Yes. Could I have bought a cheaper skiff? Yes. But I like to have something around that's going to work and do its job well and be dependable, right? So the other side of that is that when you buy those things, or when you have things that you love to use and that enhance your experience with things, what we tend to do as humans is we tend to fixate our affection on the created thing instead of the creator. And so we will begin to marry up our identity with the fact that we drive a Jeep, or we run a Sabine skiff, or we throw a certain kind of rod. And I'm not saying that any of the promotion of all that stuff is not bad. I do it. If you want to hear me sing the praises of Sabine skiff, I'll do it all the time. I think Brian makes a wonderful skiff. I'm not talking about the physical like promotion of it. I'm talking about what is going on in your heart when you think about the things that you own. Because all of these things, like when they're going to break, they're going to rot, they're going to rust, they're going to get dented, they're going to get scratched. If you let that stuff eat you up, you're going to be a miserable human. You have to have your hope and your identity and your future secured in the person of Jesus Christ, not in the created thing that God is allowing you to use to enhance your experience at whatever you're doing. So everything, this is some summarization of the totality of a section of the gospel in scripture, but our job, St. Augustine put this best. He said, there's 2 categories of things. Some people call him Augustine. I call him Augustine. There are 2 categories of things. Things to be enjoyed and things to be used. So when St. Augustine boils down those categories, everything in the world, and I mean everything, your clothes, your food, your spouse, your job, your truck, your boat, your everything, is to be used. And the only thing in the enjoyment category is God. Now you just rolled your eyes real big. I can feel it. Here's what I mean. When you are doing your job, performing your tasks at work, when you are enjoying the time out on the water, you're not terminating your enjoyment, fulfillment, joy, and hope in that thing. You're not terminating your affection and your self-worth in your spouse or how much money you make. All of that joy and hope, it's all terminated on God. Because where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. If you become infatuated with the created thing, you will become a miserable, miserable human being. Nothing on this earth can satisfy you. Learn to take the shiny things and not be too impressed with them, and use them to enjoy God. When I'm out on the water, I'm so thankful that I spent years with my tool belt on at 6:45 in the morning, being told where to go and what to do, digging a ditch, crawling to an attic, doing whatever. I didn't have time. I worked too much. I was raising kids. I didn't have time to fish. When I'm out on the water now, I do not let a day go by that I don't go, you know what? God gave me this time. He gave me this day. He gave me the tools and the resources to be able to use them. How can I glorify Him and enjoy Him in this moment? But here's the trick. Don't wait until you have the time to go fishing. The trick to life, the secret to happiness, is to, when you're crawling through that attic, when you're digging the ditch, when you're wearing your tool belt every day, to live a quiet and humble life and be able to enjoy God in those moments. That is when you become truly satisfied. And there's an old, I forget what they call them, but there's just an old saying that God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in Him. So that's our Bible tidbit for the day. I really apologize that this podcast was probably difficult to listen to because of all the hacking and long pauses, but I didn't want to miss this week. Just did the best I could. So hope you guys have a great week. Please tell your friends about the podcast. We have grown, but I'm looking at putting some effort and some elbow grease into this thing and helping it grow just a little more. So if you want to tell a fishing buddy about it, that would be awesome. I am going to be listening to the Bite Me podcast this week. I'm going to be listening to the Salty Yak podcast this week and hearing Carrie recap it. Carrie did such a great job of putting the whole trip together, and he is just one of a kind stand-up dude. Enjoyed meeting all you guys. Talk to you later.